Welcome to another edition of what I call American Exposé. It is Tuesday, the 25th of January, 2005. Tuesday, the 25th of January, 2005. What a time to be living. What a time to be experiencing the deceptions and lies that we live with on a constant basis. And what can you believe about what we're living today? What can you believe? It's so unfortunate to realize what we're a part of. And my point about it all is the fact that individuals such as myself and yourself that live in these countries around the planet are innocent. We're innocent. We are innocent people. The people living in communist China want freedom. They want to have the opportunities that we once had here. That we're losing here. The job depletion is well underway here in America. I cover that from the Economic Policy Institute to a certain degree. To realize this is most important, that everybody living in all these various countries are nothing more than innocent pawns, such as you and me, too. We're all innocent pawns to the manipulative process that government has been doing and the UN system has been maneuvering for decades into a totalitarian one-world government system under Agenda 21 that's being implemented on a constant basis. This situation with the coalition forces, as I see here in today's paper, key rebel caught. Suspect admits building 75% of Baghdad car bombs. Is this going to stop? An Al-Qaeda lieutenant in custody in Iraq has confessed to masterminding most of the car bombings in Baghdad, including the bloody 2003 assault on the UN headquarters in the capital, authorities said Monday. And once again, the UN headquarters, the sacred United Nations headquarters, listeners, are you understanding what's being developed here over a period of time? More and more prominence is building for the United Nations system. The tsunami situation has brought major prominence to the UN system. And let's see where this article takes us. Sami Mohammed Ali said, LJF, also known as Abu Ammar al-Kurdi, quote, confessed to building approximately 75% of the car bombs used in attacks in Baghdad, end quote, since the Iraq war began. With the interim Iraqi Prime Minister's spokesman, or said the interim Iraqi Prime Minister spokesman Thar el-Najib. El-Jayef was taken into custody January 15th and confessed to 32 car bombings, a government statement said, including the bombing of the UN headquarters that killed the top UN envoy in Iraq, Sergio Vieira del Mallo, and 21 other people. The suspect, a top lieutenant of al-Qaeda's Iraq leader, Abu Musab al-Zawahiri, also built the car bomb used to attack a shrine in the Shiite holy city of Najaf that killed more than 85 people in August 2003, the statement said. It said he also assembled the car bomb used in May to assassinate Izzeddine Salim, then president of the Iraqi government governing council. Two other militants linked to al-Zawahiri also have been arrested. Well, I don't see where it's going to go anywhere, this article. The point is, we went in to Iraq and take out Saddam Hussein under the guise of weapons for mass destruction. And documentation, Darren direct me to from Jackie Petru's website, which he's in charge of. He builds it. It's entitled Strategic Israel, the Secret Arsenal of the Jewish State. This is found on MSNBC.com. It's an interactive map, which was originally found on MSNBC.com. And it states here, despite Israel's refusal to acknowledge its nuclear weapon status, its secret arsenal is an open secret that Israeli policymakers don't go out of their way to deny. From its beginnings in the mid-1960s, Israel's program has developed into one that rivals most of larger powers like France and Britain. Here, based on interviews with U.S. intelligence officials and nuclear experts, is a portrait of Israel's strategic weapons program. And there's all sorts of little places to click on to. And you have air bases, strategic weapons plants, and missile facilities. Various different directions to connect to learn about. Rafael Yodafet is a missile development plant. Rafael is a Israeli Ministry of Defense's high-tech weapons research and development organization. The Haifa area is home to several Rafael facilities. Rafael has been responsible for the actual assembly of Israeli nuclear weapons since the first two weapons were made in late 1966, but now concentrates on ballistic missiles. A more modern and remote facility at Yarafat, east of Haifa, is where the weapons are assembled today. Satellite photos of the area show a highly secure underground facility with two large elevators. Moradachi Vanenu, a dissident Israeli nuclear scientist now jailed for speaking of the country's weapons program, told the Sunday Times of London, convoys carry plutonium from Dimona to Yarafat. In addition, in 1987, Pentagon report describes warheads and Mach 7 reentry vehicles for Israelis' ballistic missiles as being developed at Rafael. Rafael is home to Israel's ballistic missile research and development effort. Advanced rocket motors and anti-ballistic missiles are under development here. Scientists from Rafael regularly travel to both the U.S. weapons labs and international symposiums and, despite both countries' refusal to acknowledge Israel's nuclear status, have actually co-written papers on nuclear detonation. That's right, nuclear detonation processes with U.S. scientists. Pretty amazing. I mean, connecting these dots from MSNBC. And the point is, we went into Iraq looking for weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction are alive and well in Israel. And this is documentation that has to paint a picture of the troublemaker Israel in the Middle East, to manipulate World War III. And how far is World War III going to go before an actual World War III happens? How can you have a World War III like we had a World War II and a World War I with the weaponry that we have now? It appears to me if we do have a World War III, well, it could be over in a matter of days, a few days, unless they want a World War III that's going to slowly kill off people, where there will be no nuclear involvement at all, but they'll be using ammunition with depleted uranium and bring it back to their prospective countries under the guise of the coalition forces. Connecting dots is very difficult when you don't know the future and how the manipulation is going to continue. It's a sad situation. And here, I see in the paper, U.S. facing shortage of reserves. At the current pace of U.S. deployments to Iraq, the Pentagon may be hard-pressed by next year to provide enough reserve combat troops suitable for the mission, judging from the military service's own estimates of available manpower. People, this is highly, highly predictable information. This is nothing that is a surprise to any of us that have been monitoring and paying attention and realizing that the draft is on the horizon. But the setup scenario, the expense of all this, the outrageous expense being put forth for this military effort, while Russia sits back, Communist China sits back and observes. And their allies, and I don't care what anyone says, as far as my research goes, the Communist Chinese and the Soviet Union were always allies from the very, very start. No communist country is going to fight against another communist country unless you're talking about what happened briefly with Vietnam and Communist China at one time. And I really don't know what that was all about, and I don't think anyone knows what that was all about, because most people are in the dark about so much history, so much recent history, which is never taught. Back to the strategic Israel. Paul McKim Air Base is the Vandenberg Air Base of Israel, where missiles and rockets are assembled and tested. It is the main Israeli Defense Force research and development facility. The U.S. believes that Israel has the capability to develop and launch ICBMs, although it has never tested one. Satellite photos of the area show an airfield with one runway and seven large hangars suitable for cargo liners inside the security zone. In addition, there are other manufacturing facilities inside the zone. The missile assembly building is at the south end of the security zone, as is the launch site. Some sources indicate that Paul McKim may also be home to Israel's version of the U.S. Doomsday Plane, airborne command post to be used in wartime. Other sources suggest it is located in a hangar of or at Lod Airport. The Jericho-class ballistic missiles are known to the CIA as Yaven, named for the nearby town. So you connect all these dots to these different directions of Israel and their weapons of mass destruction all over the place. And yet we're in Iraq because Saddam Hussein's an enemy of Israel? Well, who wouldn't be an enemy of Israel at this point in time? Israel was set up, United Nations. Let's see if I can find it again. Bear with me. Let's just get to the source of this. United Nations General Assembly Resolution 181, dated September 29th, 1947, General Assembly having met in special session at the request of the mandatory power to constitute and instruct a special committee to prepare for the consideration of the question of future government of Palestine at the second regular session, having constituted a special committee and instructed it to investigate all questions and issues relevant to the problem of Palestine and to prepare proposals for the solution of the problem, and having received and examined the report of the special committee, including a number of unanimous recommendations and a plan of partition with economic union approved by the majority of the special committee, considers that the present situation in Palestine is one which is likely to impair the general welfare and friendly relations among nations, takes note the declaration of the mandatory power that it plans to complete its evaluation of Palestine by 1 August 1948, recommendations of the United Kingdom, recommendations to the United Kingdom as the mandatory power for Palestine and all other members of the United Nations, the adoption and implementation with regard to the future government of Palestine, in the plan of partition with economic union set out below. And this is a 17-page document. United Nations General Assembly Resolution 181. It goes on. Steps preparatory to independence. Termination of mandate, partition, and independence. The Security Council recommendations of the United Kingdom as the mandatory power for Palestine and all other members of the United Nations, the adoption and implementation with regard to the future government of Palestine of the plan of partition and economic union set out below, requests that the Security Council take the necessary measures as provided for in the plan for its implementation. The Security Council consider if circumstances during the transitional period require such consideration, whether the situation in Palestine constitutes a threat to the peace. If it decides that such a threat exists, and in order to maintain international peace and security, the Security Council adopted supplement the authorization of the General Assembly by taking measures under Article 39 and 41 of the UN Charter to empower the United Nations Commission, as provided in this resolution, to exercise in Palestine the functions which are assigned to it by this resolution. The Security Council determined as a threat to the peace, breach of the peace, or act of aggression in accordance with Article 39 of the Charter, any attempt to alter by force the settlement envisioned by this resolution. The Trusteeship Council be informed of the responsibilities envisioned for it in this plan. Calls upon the inhabitants of Palestine to take such steps as necessary, or as may be necessary, on their part to put the plan into effect. Appeals to all governments and all peoples to refrain from taking any action which might hamper or delay the carrying out of these recommendations, and authorizes the Security Council to reimburse travel and subsistence expenses to the members of the Commission referred to in Part 1, Section B, Paragraph 1 below, on such basis and in such form as he may determine most appropriate in these circumstances, and to provide the Commission with the necessary staff to assist in carrying out the functions assigned to the Commission by the General Assembly. And I really hadn't planned on going here, and really, honestly, this is a spontaneous broadcast. But let's take it a little further. The General Assembly authorizes the Secretary General to draw from the Working Capital Fund a sum not to exceed $2 million for the purposes set forth in the last paragraph of the resolution on the future government of Palestine. And then they talk about the plan of partition with economic union, future constitution and government of Palestine, and that's part one, A, determination or termination of mandate, partition and independence. The mandate for Palestine shall terminate as soon as possible, but in any case not later than August 1, 1948. The armed forces of the mandatory power shall be progressively withdrawn from Palestine, the withdrawal to be completed as soon as possible, but in any case not later than 1 August 1948. The mandatory power shall advise the commission as far in advance as possible of its intention to terminate the mandate and to evacuate each area. The mandatory power shall use its best endeavors to ensure that an area situated in the territory of the Jewish state, including a seaport and hinterland adequate to provide facilities for a substantial immigration, shall be evacuated at the earliest possible date, and in any event, not later than 1 February 1948. The independent Arab and Jewish states and the special international regime for the city of Jerusalem, and the special, once again, the independent Arab and Jewish states and the special international regime for the city of Jerusalem set forth in part three of this plan shall come into existence in Palestine 2 months after the evacuation of the armed forces of the mandatory power has been completed, but in any case, not later than 1 October 1948. The boundaries of the Arab state, the Jewish state, and the city of Jerusalem shall be described in parts two and three below. The period between the adoption of the General Assembly of its recommendation on the question of Palestine and the establishment of the independence of the Arab and Jewish states shall be a transitional period. And then we go to B, steps preparatory to independence. That is very lengthy. C, declaration. A declaration shall be made to the United Nations by the provisional government of each proposed state before independence. It shall contain inter alia the following clauses. General provision. The stipulation contained in the declaration are recognized as fundamental laws of the state, and no law, regulation, or official action shall conflict to interfere with these stipulations, nor shall any law, regulation, or official action prevail over them. Then they talk about Chapter 1, holy places, religious buildings and sites. And Chapter 2, religious and minority rights. Chapter 3, citizenship, international conventions, and financial obligations. Oh, we'll have to get this up on the site. All this information comes from the Avalon Project at Yale Law School. All the information, what have I really taken relevant from the Yale Law School, the Avalon Project? Well, this is the one, United Nations General Assembly Resolution 181, bringing about the State of Israel. The Anti-Comintern Pact from November 25, 1936, where Germany and Japan signed a pact to fight against the Communistic International, or the so-called Comintern. Germany and Japan in 1936 signed a pact not to let themselves get sucked into communism. That's what it's all about. Agreeing guarding against the Communistic International, the Imperial Government of Japan, and the Government of Germany, in recognition of the fact that the object of the Communist International, the so-called Comintern, is the disintegration of and the commission of violence against existing states by the exercise of all means at its command. Believing that the toleration of interference by the Communistic International in the internal affairs of nations not only endangers their internal peace and social welfare, but threatens the general peace of the world. Now that is a gigantic mouthful. Because that has been going on for decades since this statement was made on November 25th, 1936, believing that the toleration of interference by the Communistic International in the internal affairs of nations not only endangers their internal peace and social welfare, but threatens the general peace of the world. What has been happening ever since World War II, wars, Cold War, conflicts, death, destruction. Communistic International is what they call it. This was from the Yale Law School. of the Avalon Project at the Yale Law School, and then the declaration by the United Nations January 1st, 1942, people, where no country could sign a treaty against the axis of evil, which was Germany, Italy, Japan. And that was the declaration by the United Nations January 1st, 1942. Avalon Project at Yale Law School. So connecting the dots to the past, to the present, isn't that difficult. And most people don't want to spend the time to understand. I've heard before, I don't want to hear it. I just don't want to hear it. I just don't want to know anymore. Shut up. Let's talk about something else. Let's do something else. That's what I hear from people. But I understand what's going on. I understand people are messed up with trying to raise their families, support their families, jobs going below the border and overseas, manufacturing jobs disappearing. Will it ever end? Not at all. It'll never end unless this UN system is ended, Federal Reserve system is ended, the State Department is ended. Etc. U.S. facing shortage of reserves. The notion of running out of reserve troops would have been dismissed only a year ago, but the strain of fighting a longer, harder war than U.S. commanders foresaw is taking a heavy toll on part-time troops of the Army National Guard, Army Reserve, and Marine Corps Reserve. This is insane. This is stupidity. This is ridiculous. This is redundant. This is an absolute bold-faced lie. Any commander worth his salt would know going to Iraq is no different than going to Vietnam, is no different than going to Korea. You just don't know who your enemy is. This is a bold-faced lie. Once again, the notion of running out of reserve troops would have been dismissed only a year ago. But the strain of fighting a longer, harder war than U.S. commanders foresaw is taking a heavy toll on part-time troops. Baloney. That is a bold-faced lie. Any commander, any general, any military person worth his salt would know that this is suicidal to go into Iraq like we've done. Totally, absolutely suicidal. And yet we're going into Iran now, and yet Israel is, they've got their strategic weapons of mass destruction ready to react. Can you see what's being engineered here? I'll be back.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
This program on FirstAmendmentRadio.com is much more than entertainment. It is more like an information-packed audio magazine delivered direct to you. Like any magazine, if you don't want to keep getting it, simply unsubscribe by not listening. But you are listening, so now go to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there to make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program. Not only should you subscribe for yourself, but you should give extra to help us spread the message of FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Don't do Internet? You can also write us. First Amendment Radio, 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, 93274. 139 East Tulare Avenue, that's T-U-L-A-R-E Avenue, in Tulare, California, T-U-L-A-R-E, California, 93274. Thank you.
Listen up! The tanker! fire truck is going to blow. There's nothing we can do about it. I want everyone in the hot zone out. Fire, police, everyone. Do we have all the houses evacuated?
Just about, sir.
Just about?
Well, there are a couple of houses where the people look really comfortable. I hated to bother them.
What?
Well, one house is getting ready to have dinner. You know how rude it is to be interrupted during dinner.
The Bible says that there will come a time when people who do not believe in Jesus will stand before God and face an eternity in hell.
Look, that tanker is going to explode. Do your job, get in there, and tell those people they're in danger.
Oh, can't we send someone else? I feel really awkward telling people, get out now before your house explodes. I mean, who's going to believe that?
Because Jesus died for us, we can escape an eternal punishment in hell by having faith in Him. If you're not telling others about this good news, what excuses are you using? A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-523-8669. LifelinePro.com.
If you can hear my voice, you are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. If you would like to continue hearing these programs, there are several ways that you can help. One, you can make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the internet and follow the instructions there. Two, you can sponsor your favorite program with your business advertising dollars or spend your dollars with those businesses that advertise on your favorite programs. Three, simply call in on live programs and tell them that you are listening on firstamendmentradio.com. Now anyone can do that one. You can find the call-in numbers on our schedule pages at firstamendmentradio.com. And finally, you can call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address, and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening.
As we continue to deal with the lies that are given to us on a constant basis. We're constantly given lies, and this U.S. facing shortage of reserves is highly predictable. I'm told that there's a lot of people joining the Navy and the Air Force. A lot of individuals joining the Navy and the Air Force because they're not going to be foot soldiers in Iraq. And they're having trouble filling the National Guard positions. They're in the National Guard. When ever did the National Guard ever go overseas? But now, at this point in time, the National Guard is here to protect this country. And they don't do that either. The migration process, which, according to some, is an illegal immigration process, but according to Vincent A. Fox and the UN system, migration is legal and justified. What can I say? Judges overturn rulings of the American people. I've had that happen before in California. But U.S. facing shortage of reserves, is this anything that is not highly predictable and expected? It's absolutely incredible. The information that I talked about today on the shortwave broadcast about Pravda out of Russia, January 27th, about Condoleezza Rice, off to predictable start. I haven't found the internet article yet to cover that, but Condoleezza Rice, it doesn't matter who is going to take that position in the State Department, they're going to be yes people for the UN system. The State Department implements the U.S. mission of the United Nations. Here we see, and I want to get rid of some of these newspaper articles because they've been sitting around a little too long, dated January 14th, a tsunami relief benefit concert featuring local bands, the Mudslingers, Sugar Free All-Stars, and the Rounders will be Thursday at Belle Isle Brewery, 50 Penn Place. Admission is $5, with donations encouraged, and all proceeds going to the American Red Cross Tsunami Relief Fund, and the show starts at 8 p.m. This was quite a while ago, on the 14th. And there, here we go. Quote, sometimes when you watch the news, you get desensitized to the tragedy in the world, end quote, said Chris Weiser of Sugar Free All-Stars. Quote, but the magnitude of this disaster was so great that all I could do is feel helpless. Then Dave, he's the spindle of the Rounders, called me and asked if we would be interested in doing this benefit, and I said, absolutely. If we can raise even a little bit more money to help, then it is absolutely worth it, end quote, Weiser said. Was the tsunami created? Was it engineered? Was it meant to happen? Was it designed to happen? It only makes sense that it did, and it was. It only makes sense to me that that's the point and the purpose of all this, was to bring about this tsunami relief. And here we see Action Without Borders, Tsunami Relief Center. And it's just absolutely incredible. Southeast Asia Earthquake and Tsunami Blog. The Volunteer Run CEAT blog is frequently updated, clearinghouse of information on the tsunami disaster. I mean, there's no end to the information on the tsunami disaster. Was it created? Had to have been created. Because they have disaster reduction meetings, and they had a disaster reduction meeting this month. It's just insane to not believe that this was created. There's so much information about weather modification and environmental modification that I've covered and I haven't covered yet. And here we see Mourners Remember Deadly Quake. This is dated January 17th out of Kobe, Japan. Lighting thousands of candles and bowing in prayer, survivors mark the 10th anniversary of the powerful earthquake that ravaged the Japanese port city of Kobe in 1995. The tragedy killed nearly 6,500 people. Under a chilly rain, mourners from across Japan filed into a park beside Kobe City Hall to light candles in bamboo holders that formed the date of the quake, 1/17. The crowd then gathered near a subterranean memorial bearing the victims' names, fell silent in the ringing of a bell at the time of the pre-dawn quake, 5:46 a.m. Well, was that quake created? Who knows? It's hard to determine, hard to get to the bottom of this. That's the point. That's how these engineering devices work, to keep you in the dark about what's being maneuvered and manipulated into the signing of the Kyoto Protocol, the accepting of the disasters which fully devastate countries, destroy them. And that's a sad commentary to have. Here he says, Bush says troops are staying in Iraq. Mission is not done, President says. When are they ever going to leave? As we build bases in the Middle East now, for strategic directions, as we control the oil wealth in various parts of that globe, that global section, and the Afghanistan situation, that was a setup too to get in there. But more and more people don't know who their enemy is over there. And we have people wanting to leave communist China all the time. 32 Chinese males were found inside two cargo containers on a ship arriving in the port of Los Angeles from Hong Kong, authorities said. The suspected illegal immigrants were discovered Saturday night when a crane operator saw three men climb out of the container, or a container, on the Panamanian-flagged NYK Athena, Los Angeles Port Police Lieutenant Titus Smith said. The 28 men and four male teenagers appeared to be in good health and were being held at a federal detention center pending an immigration hearing. Why are people trying to get out of China to come to this country? Because it's a totalitarian slave country that thinks very little of its people. Most of them. Some people are on the upper echelon of the upper middle class in communist China. More of those people are being created. But there's no middle class. Middle class is disappearing in America. The setup scenario is most obvious to those that do the research. U.S. releases dozens of prisoners in Afghanistan. The U.S. military freed 81 prisoners held in Afghanistan on Sunday, and the country's most senior judge said the government was pressing for the release of hundreds more from American custody. You don't know who your enemy is. You don't know what they're doing. You don't know what their thought patterns are. Why did we go to Afghanistan to begin with? Because of what happened on September 11th, 2001. Way back on the 16th of January, Wolfowitz toured the devastation, and he said the U.S. is ready to step away. This is regarding the Indonesian tsunami. And then we see here state residents dig deep for relief efforts. Oklahomans continue to give to relief efforts in tsunami-ravaged areas of Asia. The Inasmuch Foundation gave $50,000 of a grant to AmeriCares, the humanitarian relief agency. The foundation also will match donations made by its directors and employees to tsunami relief and recovery efforts. Every state of the union has tsunami relief efforts. The National Football League has promotions for the World Food Program and the tsunami relief efforts. Here's a very interesting article dated January 15th or 16th. Bush says bankruptcy awaits Social Security. President Bush said Saturday that Social Security, quote, is on the road to bankruptcy, end quote, and will be unable to pay promised benefits to future generations, raising the stakes in a major political battle with Democrats. Now, this is really a setup scenario because Social Security was engineered during the Franklin Delano Roosevelt administration. It's not a bad idea to be paying into Social Security all your life to get benefits when you reach a certain age, when you can't work any longer. It's not a bad idea, in my opinion. But when you pay into Social Security all your life and then you don't get the benefits at the end, huh? Bush used his weekly radio address to try to build support for his plan to allow workers to divert part of their Social Security payroll taxes into private investment accounts. Democrats accuse him of exaggerating the problem to sell a plan that would scale back Social Security. Bush said the cost of fixing the system grows larger each year. And he quoted Social Security trustees as saying that waiting just 1 year would add $600 billion to the price of a solution. There's more to this, but the point is we have these military directions that we take costing billions of dollars, and yet we can't afford to take care of our old. And there you have the scenario in place. Dated Wednesday, the 19th of January, we certainly heard about Rice facing questions on Iraq, Condoleezza Rice. Fertilizer rule change proposed. Agriculture leaders are proposing a rule that would require retailers to keep personal information on those purchasing the type of fertilizer used in the Oklahoma City bombing 10 years ago. The rule would require sellers to keep for 2 years names, driver's license numbers, phone numbers, addresses, amount of ammonium nitrate bought, and date of sale. Similar laws already exist in South Carolina and Nevada and would boost public safety, supporters said Tuesday at a public hearing at the State Agricultural Building. And this is just hogwash, a bold-faced lie, an outright sick bold-faced lie, because it doesn't make any sense at all to think that an ammonium nitrate bomb did the damage on the Alfred P. Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. Doesn't make any sense at all. No sense whatsoever, especially when they had other bombs in the building that were dismantled immediately. And that's a fact. Let me get through these articles so I can get this newspaper out of here. UN halts ban on staff travel in Indonesia. The United Nations lifted a travel ban Tuesday on aid workers in Indonesia's tsunami-battered Aceh province. The province has been the scene of decades-long conflict between rebels and government forces that has raised concerns about the safety of relief efforts. The United Nations imposed a 24-hour travel ban on its staff in parts of Aceh on Monday following reports of fighting between insurgents and the army. UN Security Consultant Warner von den Berg said the world body decided not to renew the ban after speaking with police in the coastal city of Lukosanamai about reported fighting there. Other aid groups and foreign troops helping in the relief effort in ASA said they were working as normal. U.S. military spokesman said the American forces did not believe the security situation had changed in recent days. Anyway, the UN gets the prominence today. And that is the situation that we live with. The UN gets the prominence. GMC's profits stall in fourth quarter, perfectly normal. Raising health care costs and lingering struggles in its European operations helped drive down General Motors Corporation's profit by 37% in the fourth quarter, and the world's biggest automaker said it expects a rough start this year. GM official said Wednesday the company expects break-even or better results in the current quarter, reflecting lower vehicle production and sales of less profitable cars and trucks. They expect U.S. vehicle sales to be down slightly in 2005 from robust volume last year. And the point is, people aren't buying like they used to. People can't afford to buy like they used to. More on the tsunami date of January 23rd. Diplomats try to resolve aid dispute in Sri Lanka. Norwegian diplomats were trying Saturday to get the Sri Lankan government and Tsunami Tiger rebels to form a body to ensure tsunami aid is fairly distributed, aiming to resolve guerrillas' accusations the government is blocking supplies to their areas. The aid dispute has undermined hopes that dealing with the disaster, which killed some 31,000 people in Sri Lanka, would bring the two sides closer together and back to the negotiating table for a lasting peace agreement. And how do you get a lasting peace agreement when you don't understand what's going on? How many times did we go to the bargaining table with the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War? The peace talks took years to go on. Henry Kissinger was in charge of that. Henry Kissinger, a real piece of work, listeners. Have any of you ever read National Security Study Memorandum 200 about depopulating the third world countries? I think that was put together by Henry Kissinger in 1974. The world's nations agreed Saturday to work together to better guard against natural disasters by taking steps ranging from strengthening building codes to expanding the monitoring of nature's upheavals. I don't know whether you can really consider its nature when you have the ability to create environmental modification on countries? Do you honestly think the five hurricanes coming to Florida were nature's design? The first concrete step 4 weeks after the earthquake tsunami killed between 150,000 and 221,000 people, according to varying government tallies. The World Conference on Disaster Reduction laid groundwork for the first tsunami early warning system in the Indian Ocean, expected to be in place next year. The five-day, 168-nation UN conference concluded after dozens of workshops and a final night of closed-door negotiation by adopting a framework for action, resolving to pursue substantial reduction of disaster losses in the next 10 years. That's the UN system at work, people. That is the scenario insight. And there's so much to this UN system that most people don't want to know about it. They don't care. They aren't concerned. January 23rd, from the world section of the Oklahoman, fears of nationalism bias are rising among the Russian-speaking minority regarding the Ukrainian inauguration. Viktor Yushchenko, to be sworn in as president, has pledged to steer Ukraine on a new course, fighting corruption and bringing the country closer to the European Union and NATO while maintaining good relations with Russia. NATO, an organization of the United Nations system, NATO, in their charter, say, "We uphold the principles of the United Nations" on the first sentence. NATO, part of the UN system. Here we see California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger should be stripped of citizenship in his native Austria for approving the execution of a convicted killer. Peter Pilz, a leading Austrian politician, said Saturday the demand by a top official from the environmentalist Green Party had little chance for success, but it underscores how Schwarzenegger has lost popularity in his homeland over his support for the death penalty. You have to have consequences for crimes that are perpetrated. You've got to use your head when pulling off crimes. In other words, don't pull them off at all. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say about this. The UN set the standards for jails and prisons in 1955. The UN system is involved in our prison process. People don't even know that. And I have that information. Here we see Rwandans view genocide film. Sometimes in April, a movie on the 1994 Rwandan genocide premiered Saturday at a stadium that was one of the scenes of slaughter more than a decade ago. It was filmed mostly in Rwanda, where Hutu extremist militias, there's that word militia, vilifying the word militia, and soldiers killed more than 500,000 minority Tutsis and politically moderate Hutus between April and July of 1994, more than 5,000 people, including government officials, actors, journalists, and genocide survivors, attended Saturday's screening at Kigali's Amahoro Stadium. Haven't seen the movie, but the point is, what do we need? Oh, we need a United Nations Rapid Deployment Force to keep that from happening again. That's the scenario that was brought about for. And that's what that was all about. And they're working on that right now. They're working on that right now. On the 23rd of January, hundreds gathered to remember victims. Friends and families gathered Saturday on a windy beach to bid farewell to 10 people who were killed when a mudslide damaged more than two dozen homes in the free-spirited oceanfront village of La Cochita. Hundreds of people wearing shorts, sandals, and Hawaiian shirts converged for the ceremony in which surfers planned to paddle about 100 yards from shore and say a prayer before spreading the ashes of some of the victims amid flowers floating on the waves. The mudslide on January 10th was triggered by days of heavy rain that turned Southern California into a flood zone. The torrential rain was responsible for 28 deaths in the state. Now, the point is, what was this all about? We had drought for years in Southern California. Droughts can be created, been documented, been stated by many. And then all of a sudden you have a tremendous rain. What do you have? Disasters from too much rain. What can be done as a result of this? World Heritage Sites can be created out of the UN system, shutting the land off to people not being able to rebuild anymore in that part of the world, in that part of the country. This can be done. Here we see, dated Saturday, January 22nd, the number of rigs actively exploring for oil and natural gas in the United States was up by 5 this week to 1,263. The rigs running nationwide, 1,084, were exploring for gas, 177 were looking for oil, and 2 more listed as miscellaneous. Houston-based Baker Hughes Incorporated reported Friday, a year ago, the rig count was 1,087. Of the major oil and gas producing states, Texas gained 8 rigs, Oklahoma gained 5, and Alaska gained 2. Wyoming lost 4 rigs, California lost 3, and New Mexico lost 1. The number of rigs in Colorado and Louisiana was unchanged. In other words, the move for looking for oil is underway in this country to a certain degree. Now, do you honestly think that if Gore was in charge or if Kerry was in charge, that this would ever even happen at all? Alaska area will open to drilling is the next article in the paper that needs to be heard. I'll be back to continue in the second hour, which is about to begin. I'll be back.
Today, all the words just slipped away.